All right, let's dive right in today. We're taking a close look at a Supreme Court case and Sonia Board of Education v. Philbrook. It's a big one when we're talking about religious accommodations at work.
Oh, definitely a landmark case, 1986. Right?
86. It really set some clear boundaries on what employers have to do. And, you know, it's amazing how relevant it still is today. Like, this case comes up all the time when we talk about employment law now.
For sure. So future employers, future employees, really anyone who wants to understand, like, the legal side of things, Philbrook lays a lot of the groundwork.
It does. It does. And, you know, the big question in this case, like the one we really want to dig into, is when an employee asks for something specific to accommodate their religion, does the employer have to say yes to that exact thing?
Right. Or can they offer a different solution, one they think is reasonable, even if it's not what the employee wanted at first?
That is the question. It sounds pretty straightforward, but the details.
Well, that's where things get really interesting.
You said it. We've got some great resources to help us break it all down, like really detailed explanations of the case and everything. But first, let's just set the stage. Like, what even brought this case to the Supreme Court in the first place? What was going on?
Okay, so the whole thing revolves around a guy named Ronald Philbrook. He was a high school teacher.
High school teacher, okay.
Yeah. He'd been working for the Ansonia Board of Education in Connecticut for a while, since 1962.
Okay, so he's pretty established there.
Then in 68, he converts to the Worldwide Church of God.
Okay.
And this is where things get kind of tricky. See, his faith, it required him to take certain days off work, like holy days.
Uh-huh, makes sense.
It worked out to about 6 days every year for religious observance.
6 days every year, got it. Now, what about the school board? What was their policy on leave at that time? Because that's got to be a big part of the issue, right?
Oh, for sure. So their leave policy, it was all spelled out in the collective bargaining agreement they had with the teachers' union.
A union contract, yeah.
The contract gave teachers 3 days of paid leave, specifically for religious holidays every year.
3 days, okay.
Plus they had 18 days of paid sick leave.
All right, that's standard.
And they could use up to 3 of those sick days for necessary personal business. But there's a catch.
There's always a catch.
Those personal days, you couldn't use them for religious reasons. It said so right in the contract.
So if you needed time off for something religious beyond those 3 days,
you had to take unpaid leave.
Okay, I see the problem brewing here. Philbrook needs 6 days. They only pay for 3 for religious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't use those personal days for anything religious. So that sets up a pretty direct conflict.
Exactly.
So how did Philbrook try to, like, work this out with the school board? Did he just file a lawsuit right away?
No, he actually tried to find a compromise first. He gave them a couple of suggestions. Like, he asked if he could just use 3 of his personal days for those extra religious holidays he needed.
Seems reasonable.
And he even offered to pay for a substitute teacher himself so he could take those days off and still get paid.
He was trying to be proactive about it.
He was. But the school board, they just shut down both of his ideas. They kept saying their policy with the 3 days and the unpaid leave option, that was good enough that it met their requirements. And that's what eventually pushed Philbrook to file that complaint.
Okay, so the legal battle begins. A complaint alleging religious discrimination.
Right.
Where did that complaint go first?
So first, he took it to the Connecticut Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities.
State level, okay.
Yep. Then it went up to the EEOC, the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Uh-huh.
After all that, he finally filed a lawsuit in federal district court.
Okay, so it's getting serious now.
Mm-hmm.
And what did the district court say? Did they side with Philbrook? Did they think the school board was discriminating?
This is where it gets interesting. The district court actually ruled in favor of the school board. They said, since Philbrook had the option of unpaid leave, he wasn't being forced to choose between his job and his religious beliefs.
Right.
So no unlawful discrimination, they said.
So in their eyes, that unpaid leave was enough.
Yep. But that wasn't the end of it.
Of course not. This is going all the way to Supreme Court. It went up on appeal, right?
Oh, yeah. Philbrook appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, and they saw things differently, like very differently. They actually reversed the district court's decision.
Flipped it completely.
Yeah. They said Philbrook did have a valid discrimination claim, what's called a prima facie case. But they went even further than that. They said the school board had to accept one of Philbrook's proposed accommodations, the personal days, or paying for a sub, unless they could prove that doing so would be a serious burden, like create an undue hardship for the school.
Okay, so now the Second Circuit's saying the employer has to go with the employee's preferred accommodation unless it's a major problem for them. That's a big shift from the district court's decision. So obviously this is headed to the highest court. Why did the Supreme Court decide this case was worthy of their attention?
Well, you have the district court saying one thing, the appeals court saying the opposite.
A direct conflict.
Exactly. How's an employer supposed to know what to do? The Supreme Court had to step in and clarify what Title VII really meant when it came to religious accommodations. They basically said, all right, we need to settle this.
So let's get to the heart of it then. What was the big specific legal question in front of the Supreme Court? Like, what did they have to decide?
The main question was, does Title VII, that part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, does it force an employer to accept any reasonable accommodation that an employee suggests, as long as it doesn't cause undue hardship?
Right.
Or can the employer just offer any reasonable accommodation, even if the employee would prefer something else?
Even if it's not their top choice?
Yeah.
Okay. So what did they decide? What was the Supreme Court's answer?
Well, in the end, they sided with the school board, at least partly. They said that, yes, an employer fulfills their obligation under Title VII if they offer a religious accommodation that's reasonable.
Reasonable. Okay.
Importantly, they said the employer doesn't have to accept the specific accommodation the employee wants, even if that suggestion is also reasonable.
So the employer has some choices.
Right. But and this is a big but they also said the accommodation can't discriminate against the employee's religion.
That's a crucial point. So employer can choose, but it has to be reasonable and not discriminatory.
I like how they found a balance there, you know. They acknowledge that employers need to be able to run their businesses.
Yeah.
But they also said you can't just ignore people's religious needs. And it wasn't just about leave time. This case set a precedent for how we think about accommodating all sorts of religious practices in a fair way.
Absolutely. A real turning point. So let's unpack the court's reasoning a little bit. Like, why did they land on that particular interpretation?
Well, they looked closely at the language of Title VII and at what Congress intended when they wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
And they pointed out that the law doesn't actually say, flat out, that employers must agree to the employee's preferred accommodation. The main goal of Title VII is to prevent religious discrimination and make sure people can practice their religion at work without any problems, or as few problems as possible, you know?
Right. It's about finding ways to make it work.
Exactly. To make it work.
Okay. Now, what about that idea of unpaid leave being enough? The district court seemed to think that was okay. Did the Supreme Court agree?
So, generally, yes. They said that if an employer offers unpaid leave for religious observances, on top of any paid leave they already offer, that would usually be considered reasonable.
Reasonable. Okay.
Their logic was that unpaid leave solves the problem, right? It lets the employee observe their religious holidays without getting penalized at work. Sure, they lose pay for those days, but the court said that's not really affecting their job status or future opportunities.
Makes sense on the surface, but you mentioned an exception earlier where unpaid leave might not be enough. When does it cross the line?
Right. That's where the discrimination question comes in.
Uh-huh.
The court said that if an employer's policy treats religious practices differently, like worse than similar secular practices, then just offering unpaid leave might not cut it.
I see. So like if the policy is stricter for religious reasons than for non-religious ones, then there's a problem.
Right. Like let's say the school board let employees use their paid personal days for a ton of different things.
Yeah.
But specifically said, no, you can't use them for religious holidays.
Yeah.
That would look a lot like discrimination. Right. And in Philbrook's case, if they let people use personal days for all sorts of reasons but said no to him using them for his religious leave, well, that could be seen as unfair and unreasonable.
It's all about how the policies are applied.
Yeah.
So that's why the Supreme Court didn't just make a final decision, right? They sent it back to the lower courts.
Exactly. They wanted more information about how the school board actually used that personal business leave policy. Like, could people really use those days for anything? Or were there sneaky restrictions that targeted religious practices?
So more fact-finding was needed. And that brings us to Justice Marshall's partial dissent. He agreed that the case needed to go back to the lower courts.
Right.
Right. To figure out if there was discrimination going on with those leave policies.
Yeah, he was on board with that. But he also made another point. He thought that even if the policy itself wasn't discriminatory, employers should always be talking to their employees and trying to find better accommodations if the first one they offer, like unpaid leave, isn't really working for the employee.
Okay, so he's advocating for a more, like, interactive and ongoing process.
Right. He didn't want employers to just offer one reasonable solution and call it a day.
Keep the dialogue open.
Exactly. And he actually thought the EEOC guidelines, which encourage this kind of back and forth, should have been given more consideration by the court.
Interesting. Now, Justice Stevens also had some thoughts on this case. And he went in a slightly different direction, didn't he?
He did. So, Justice Stevens, he agreed with the majority that the Second Circuit was wrong to say employers always have to accept the employee's preferred accommodation.
Okay.
But he wanted to go even further. He would just reverse the Second Circuit's decision completely right then and there. He thought it was clear from the information they already had that Philbrook didn't have a real discrimination claim.
So no need to send it back to the lower courts,
right,
in his view. Why did he think that? What was his reasoning?
Well, he basically said Philbrook wasn't complaining about religious discrimination. Not really. He thought Philbrook just wanted the same number of paid leave days as people who were using personal days for non-religious reasons. Like, it was about the number of days, not about religion.
Ah, okay. I see his point.
And because unpaid leave was available to Philbrook, you know, to resolve the direct conflict between his religious needs and his work schedule, Justice Stevens didn't think the employer had to accommodate him at all. He saw taking unpaid leave for religious reasons as no different from taking unpaid leave for any other reason once you've used up your paid time off.
So different justices, different perspectives on the situation and what the law required. It's really interesting to see those different angles. Okay, so stepping back a bit, what's the legacy of Philbrook? What did it really clarify for employers and employees who were dealing with these issues in the real world?
Philbrook was a big deal because it made it crystal clear that, yes, employers have to reasonably accommodate their employees' religious practices. That's the law. But they don't have to accept the employee's specific suggestion if they have another solution that's reasonable.
The employer gets to choose from the reasonable options.
Exactly. But, and this is so important, that choice can't be discriminatory.
Can't single out religious practices for worse treatment.
Right.
And how has this played out in workplaces today?
Mm-hmm.
Is unpaid leave still the go-to solution for employers?
It's still pretty common, yeah. If someone needs time off for religious reasons beyond what's covered by paid leave, employers often offer unpaid leave.
Okay.
But Philbrook really emphasized the importance of context.
Right. It's not just a blanket rule.
Employers need to look at all their leave policies, especially how they handle paid leave, like personal days or floating holidays. If those are easy to get for non-religious reasons, but an employee can't use them for religious reasons, that's a big red flag. It could be seen as discriminatory.
So what's allowed for secular reasons has to be allowed for religious reasons.
Pretty much. The key is that the policy has to be neutral when it comes to religion.
Okay, I'm with you. You mentioned floating holidays before. Can you give us another example, like a real-world scenario of how Philbrook might come into play?
Sure. Let's say a company offers these floating holidays, right? Employees can use them for anything, taking a longer vacation, going to a family thing, whatever personal reason they have.
Flexible time offs, yeah.
Right. Now, imagine that same company has a rule that says, nope, you can't use those floating holidays for any religious holidays that aren't already on the company calendar.
I see where you're going.
That would raise some serious Philbrook questions, wouldn't it? Because it looks like they're giving preferential treatment to secular needs. If you need a day off to go to a concert, no problem, use a floating holiday.
But need a day off for religious observance.
Suddenly there are restrictions.
That seems pretty unfair.
And potentially illegal. It goes back to that neutrality principle.
So the big takeaway for our listeners is that employers can choose the accommodation, but it has to be reasonable. And their policies can't treat religious practices worse than similar secular practices.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter if it's not what the employee originally asked for. As long as it meets those criteria, the employer has done what's legally required.
Well, this has been a fascinating look at Ansonia Board of Education v. Philbrook. It really shows how tricky it can be to balance religious freedom and the needs of a workplace.
It does.
It definitely gives everyone a lot to think about, especially when it comes to creating fair workplace policies and protecting individual rights.
For sure. And, you know, it brings up another really interesting question that we didn't quite have time to get into today. What exactly is undue hardship for an employer? Like, how far do they have to go?
That is a great question.
Yeah, it's another area of law that's super important and pretty complex. Maybe for a future deep dive, we could take a look at some of the cases that address that issue, like the Hardison case or the more recent Groff decision. They all connect to this idea of religious accommodation and really help us understand the whole legal landscape.
That sounds like a plan. Until then, Keep those brains working.
I'll be